This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nation, welcome to episode number 4 of Wrestling's Warzone, a Monday Night Wars retrospective podcast series. I am JT. Joining me, as always, this evening is my co-host on the show, and that is Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you?
Howdy, howdy. I got my tobacco in my mouth. That's a shout out to Brad, making fun of my southern accent on the last episode. But
he's a jerk. He doesn't know what you sound like by now. He's going to make fun of it.
Well, I guess I wasn't popping enough peas for him.
Yeah, so never are. Never popping enough peas. But if you're new to the show, you shouldn't be. You should be listening already, but you should go back and catch up. Chad and I are working our way through the Monday Night Wars television and pay-per-view-wise. We started with week number 2 of Nitro, and we've worked our way from there. We did Fall Brawl. We've done a couple Raws, a couple Nitros. And tonight, sir, we are arriving at our first WWF pay-per-view together as a team, and that is In Your House number 3 from September 95. But before we get to that, we had a little bit of business to clean up from our last episode. If you recall, the 9/18 Raw, we had a bit of a debate and conjecture as to when that actually aired, because during the show, at least the version we watched on the network, they comment like it was on a Thursday. Vince McMahon basically says it's Thursday night edition. But the more we kind of started to piece things together, it seemed like it was actually a Monday, and maybe that was a replay, which would fit with my foggy old school memories of the show. So we did a little bit of research, Chad, and what have we come up with here?
Well, we went to Big Dave and the Observer, and this is one where he's actually right. So we don't know if there's 93,000 people in the Silver Dome or not, but he did confirm that this was a Monday edition and talked about the ratings and Raw squeaking out a victory over Nitro, and then he mentioned that they were going to start doing the Thursday replay, so yes, everything kind of fell into place. It made a lot of sense, and the network just ended up using the Thursday dub for whatever reason. So that was pretty good, I guess, auditing on our part in the last episode, that we kind of independently came to that conclusion. But yeah, it was a Monday night, so they were head-to-head on that night, and Raw won. I think it was 2.5 to 2.4.
Vindicated. Victory. A few other people, Steve Williams was one, and I think a couple others stepped up and kind of verified my memory that they did do Thursday replays. He said they go through the fourth quarter of 95. We'll see. I'm trying to recall. But it was so weird that this is one particular episode that I very vividly remember watching on a Thursday. So there you go. Finally confirmed. There were Thursday replays of Raw. And I'm guessing it was like 10 o'clock, so it was not up against all the shows we went through last week, Friends and Seinfeld.
Well, that still would have been up against ER, but even
true.
Still.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure the replay didn't do that good. But yeah.
I mean, it could have even been 11, honestly. I mean, it could have been even later, maybe.
Yeah.
But anyway, there it was. There it be. Raw replays existed on a Thursday night. So, all right, Chad. So, yes, that does bring us to In Your House pay-per-view here tonight. Like I said, is our first WWF pay-per-view, and this comes to you live on September 24th from Saginaw, Michigan, the Saginaw Civic Center. Quite the watering hole for this show. very tiny joint. Holds 7,600 max. That's for concerts. So,
yeah, this is a Fall Brawl was in Asheville, North Carolina. This is probably the equivalent. Kind of one of those mid-range towns, and it shows kind of where we're at because nowadays they would not have a pay-per-view in Saginaw, Michigan. They don't even have pay-per-views in Birmingham, Alabama, which is a bigger town than Saginaw or Augusta, kind of some of these fringe towns. But I think this is an interesting show because based on our feedback, there was a few people that had never watched this show in full. And
it surprised me that there's diehard WWF fans out there that haven't seen every pay-per-view. I'll call him a Jay Hinchy. He's a diehard fan, right? I would assume he's seen everything. So I was surprised that he had actually never saw this.
I can't remember. What was the WrestleMania he said he'd never seen? That came up. I'm sure Jay can reach out when he listens, but I was flabbergasted during WrestleMania season when he said he'd never seen that one. But yeah, me personally, I'd probably rented this tape if it was available, but I didn't remember anything except the Lafitte Bret Hart match, which I had on various comps and stuff, because that was always kind of when I got in the tape trading scene and you had your WWF centric comps, that always seemed to be a favorite choice to kind of throw on to a comp tape because it's a pretty quick match, about 20 minutes can fill up the comp, and it's not going to fill up a lot of time, and it's really good, as we'll get to later.
And it probably speaks to its, this show kind of being a forgotten one because I think it was looked at as a hidden gem all those years when it popped up on all those comp tapes and everything else. Many people probably figured a lot of fans hadn't seen it. I ordered this live, I know that for sure, and I've seen it a ton because, again, at that time, I only had so many tapes and so many things to watch. So I used to just read, and they were quick hits, right? So I'd get home from school, throw it on or whatever, and do homework. So I've definitely seen these late 95 In Your Houses a bunch. So I knew it well.
Depressing 1995 WWF fanboy you were.
That's all I had, man. That's all I had.
14 years old, ordering In Your House 3.
Yes. Okay. Well, they were cheap. It's only $15 or whatever.
Is that is the Bret Hart Lafitte match, is it on one of the Bret Hart DVDs that were officially released? I don't have my DVD cabinet Andy right here next to me, can't.
I'm used to having podcast partners that can just rifle through it quickly. Yeah. I'm a little disappointed. You can't just pull that up for me. Let me see here real quick. See what Graham has listed. I do know this was one of the ones in the Titan Sinking books. It gets pretty much the full. James Dixon did a full recap of this match in his book, which I thought was pretty well done. For those that have read that,
yeah, I still need to read that. I haven't read any. I don't think I've read any wrestling centric books in a long time. It may have been the first Bret book was the last one I read.
Yeah, no, his were all good. There's a lot of interesting tidbits, especially the 95 one. There's a lot, a lot in there. So it's on the Bret Hart Dungeon Collection DVD.
Okay, cool. There we go.
There's some dark matches on this show, Chad. With Wikipedia, there's one listed before and then three after. So I don't know how that usually went. I do know sometimes they would have people stay later because it's only, it's under a two-hour show, so they'd pad it out for the people in the arena. Fatu defeated Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Was Fatu making a difference by this time?
Yeah, he sure is, sir. He sure is.
Okay, there we go.
That started in the summer. You know what's funny, too? That the original character for that was a little bit more nuanced and had more depth than I remembered. Because when Scott and I were doing the written versions of these, they were doing all the vignettes. And they admitted he was the head shrinker. And that he had gone back to, San Francisco where he had grown up. And he was trying to, make a difference. And it's kind of been turned into, a cartoony thing. But it was actually a pretty poignant character. He was going back to his old neighborhood where kids had fallen into, gang stuff, and he grew up and escaped, and he wanted to go back and make a difference for his old neighborhood and become, a role model. And I think his look is just kind of, the time, right? 95 had, the kind of garish color.
The time? What the fuck school were you going to?
What? What do you think?
Nobody looked like that. That was...
No? What do you think? More like 93, maybe?
I don't think anything. He looked like he was in a circus.
It was over. Go back and look at those vignettes. He had the look of fucking Kid and Play and all that shit.
But it's very over exaggerated. Come on.
Yeah, it's wrestling, of course. Everything is. All right. But you don't get what I'm saying. It's been turned into he's a joke character. But he actually had a little bit more depth than I had remembered.
All right.
Everyone remembers just like him kind of being goofy. I think it's the ass, honestly. I think it's his fat ass. That makes it hard to take him seriously.
I just think it was a bad character.
Well, they didn't follow up on the nuance. I'm not saying that he kept it. I'm saying the initial vignettes presented him as a guy going back to his old hood to help save kids and help them.
Well, we'll probably see some of him coming up on some third hour tape in Raw. So, for sure.
And at least a couple
hash it out then. Yeah.
All right. So the other dark match is Goldust, who we haven't seen yet much of besides vignettes.
He's like the king of the In Your House dark match.
Oh, yeah. He owns him. He's fighting Bob Holly here. He defeats him. Ahmed Johnson, who we haven't seen yet, defeats Skip. So he's working dark matches here. And Undertaker defeats King Mabel. So.
And I think Ahmed, Ahmed Modem? Morris? Or no. let me see.
Ahmed Williams
I got that.
Is what.
Yeah, Ahmed Williams. There you go. Yep, he was going by that at this time.
So he's working darks already. He doesn't debut until Survivor Series. It'll be a while before we see him. But actually, he might pop up on a Raw right before him.
might want to rephrase that sentence.
What did I say?
Ahmed's working darks already.
Well, he wrestled Skip, so
okay.
Skip's working darks. All right, so that brings us to this. So those are our dark matches. And that brings it. We're going to create the wrap on this show. We got Booker T getting whipped. We got Ahmed working darks. Got it all here.
Fatu making a difference. He needs to make a difference on the podcast.
It's Trump's America, baby. That's what we're podcasting.
Good Lord.
All right, so let's get to the actual show, Chad. So our opener and our commentary team, by the way, is Vince McMahon, Jim Ross, and Jerry Lawler. We had all three in the booth here tonight. So I thought that was pretty good. Did you enjoy them throughout the night?
Well, I mean, I thought they were good. But I'd really enjoyed like the first couple of weeks of Raw, like JR and King's interaction. Yeah. I thought it got a little muddled here with Ross mixed in. Vince and King, excuse me. I think with JR mixed in, it got a little muddled. Still, I'd say it was adequate, but I was kind of excited in the beginning, especially because they do the intro where
in your house.
Oh, well, you can't defend that song. That song is awful.
In your house tonight. They used to do, like, the different versions, too. Like, In Your House 2 in Nashville had, like, the country version of the song. And they do all kinds of different takes on it. But
I was going to say, what's Saginaw, Michigan's, like, claim to fame for music?
We're doing drugs. we're out of work tonight.
Yeah, there you go.
Assembly
line.
The guy who did that song, he was around like through that year. I think it's the guy who ends up being the Raw band in 96. We'll see as they have the in-house band led by Doc Hendricks. But
oh my god,
he does this song, and I think he's the one that does the infamous Superstars one.
Yeah,
Diesel Cool Undertaker. He does that song too. So I think it's like a band they were working with during that time.
It's kind of sounded like Diesel's music a little bit to me.
A little, yeah, yeah. They might have tried to overlay it in.
But both JR and the King predict Michaels is going to lose. King says to Owen, and JR says to Yoko. So those are the predictions we have going into tonight.
And JR is kind of annoying from here over really the next year, because it feels like he's like trying to really – like whenever he gets these chances, he tries to like I think make them count. You know, like he tries to get all his shit in where he can because he wasn't doing Raw, the main shows.
Right, right.
But he so he's doing that, and then he's also in, like, super smark mode Jim Ross at this point, even before he's doing the heel stuff a year from now. Like, he's already starting, like, the just, like highly caffeinated, super snarky Jim Ross. Like, he does it a lot in the stretch show. We get it quite a bit on these pay-per-views, so there you go. Settle it.
So our first match is Savio Vega versus Waylon Mercy, one of your guilty pleasures there. Boy, where do I begin on this one? Savio has the hang loose hand signal, yes. Kind of cut in to the back of his head as part of his haircut. Waylon's basically this match I thought was pretty slow and plodding. Waylon works over Savio. The work wasn't bad. I didn't think like it wasn't atrocious. But I've always found Spivey or Spivvy as a very awkward worker. And even like in the All Japan stuff, like, I mean, I would take Johnny Hayes easily over him from the All Japan stuff I've seen. So it just, And that, to me, like, carried over throughout his whole career, where I thought he was kind of awkward and lumbering, I guess, would maybe be the best word for it.
Especially now, too, because he's the injuries caught up to him.
He's getting up there, too. Yeah, he has his little pot belly with this gimmick, so he's certainly not in tip-top shape. Probably 1991 circa All Japan is the best he was. Doc Hendricks makes a mention that Owen Hart is not in the building. Savio makes a comeback and does get a big boot on Mercy, which I thought was impressive because Mercy is a legitimately pretty tall dude.
Yeah.
And then we get sort of a weird bulldog for a near fall and then a kind of weird lucha-inspired roll-up off of that, which I thought that was some good variation from Savio, probably kind of his Puerto Rican roots blending in there. Waylon responds back, plants Savio with a brainbuster, which looked good.
Yeah,
back
that was
suplex
nice.
That. From Waylon also gets another kick out. I did think the crowd was pretty dead, and Savio starts making his comeback and hits one of the weakest German suplexes I've seen in quite some time. Absolutely no elevation. And then he hits the spinning heel kick, which probably didn't make contact, or if it did, it barely did. So overall, I found this to be a pretty blah opener, gave it a star and a half.
Yeah, so I definitely liked it more than you. I thought Mercy's been protected pretty well, but this is like the first real challenge they gave him. And it's kind of feel like whoever wins this is going to be better positioned or kind of like get like a key win. Like they kind of presented it that way. Mercy's definitely was in slow motion and awkward, but sometimes I like it when it's not smooth. Like I've talked about this with Scott a lot too on the show. I don't mind when my wrestling is like stiff and awkward and botchy. Like it makes it feel real to me at times. Now there are obviously times like you mentioned some whiffs in here and everything else that doesn't make it feel real. I like Savio selling. I like the comeback. The brainbuster was my favorite move in the match. And it's kind of a shocking win for Savio when you consider where both are. And I feel like that's been Savio's whole run so far. Like he kind of picks up wins that you don't expect him to get. And he's becoming that guy that always just is around and getting wins. We started King of the Ring. No one really thought he'd go to the finals, and now he gets one here over Waylon, who was presented more as the guy getting the push. So even with the slow pace, it felt kind of hard-hitting to me, other than that the move at the end that kind of whiffed. I like the brainbuster. I like Mercy suplex. I like some of the strikes. And I don't know. I just had fun with it. Like, it didn't really overstay its welcome. I'm a Mercy mark, so I actually went 2.25. I know it's a little high, but again, I liked it. I didn't think it was that bad, and it was pretty quick. What was it?
It was like almost 7 minutes.
Yeah,
I
so I mean, it was fine. Yeah. It was a it was the Scott Criscolo certified non offensive match. So there you go.
Good
decent
lord,
decent length.
Oh boy! All right, it's probably the most dissension we've had, and I'll just sprinkle in Meltzer's ratings for these. He gave that one 0.25 star. So there you go. He's even worse than anybody. and then we head backstage, right, where Cornette, we get our first backstage vignette of Cornette losing it.
Yeah.
He says Owen's in Michigan, so this is our first inkling that Owen Hart's not in the building. Something may be kind of affecting the main event tonight. Gorilla does tell him the match will go on. So, again, you know, you're pleasing the fans, President Gorilla Monsoon, making another ruling here that the match will go on.
I enjoy him trolling Cornette too. Like he's pretty good at it. You know, he's like,
yeah. Well, it doesn't feel like they had much interaction. You know what I mean? Like it don't feel like they were, I guess, around or interacted that much for two guys that were in the industry for so long. Like you know, it's kind of like with Cornette and Bobby, like at the 93, like when you see them together, it's so kind of magical because these two titans are kind of interacting and they just didn't.
We definitely get more. Cornette and Gorilla do a bunch from here out. Like that.
Yeah, it's probably for here till the with the Vader and everything else. So yeah, this is just ramping up. And then that leads us into our second big matchup, right? Which is Sid versus Henry O. Godwin.
Henry O.
So as we talked about on the previous episode, this is quite the downgrade from Sid.
What a drop.
To go from where he was to this.
He's just circling the toilet bowl. I mean, that's all it is. He's just...
Well, he got slopped on Superstars. They show us that. he lost his shit over that. Ross drops a slobber knocker onto this match a minute in, so that's kind of his. I thought that was kind of snarky of him, you know, yeah. Like immediately saying, "Oh, this is gonna be a slobber knocker," just the way
he's gonna be ugly
it.
As fuck.
Yeah,
care and Godwin's sloppy. So there you go.
Right after that, though, Godwin suplexes Sid back into the ring,
mm-hmm.
and that was a really good, impressive looking spot. I was surprised at that. But it was weird because, like, he does this impressive suplex, and I get, like, selling that, okay, it's tough to suplex this big guy. But that was essentially the transition to Sid working on top.
Right.
Like, he's just, like, the first guy up, and then he takes over on offense. It was kind of weird, and, like, commentary kind of just skipped right over that. Sid, for this match, works the back mostly.
And that was from Sid had attacked Henry on TV and powerbombed him, I think, on the floor. So that's why they focus on the back here. So pretty good psychology, at least, on that.
That was a good thought. The work from Sid on top, not as inspiring. We get the chin lock, of course. Now, the crowd did get behind Hogg with his comeback, which was, to me, impressive. He goes for the slop drop. DiBiase distracts him. Then DiBiase trips him up, and Sid finishes him with a powerbomb. Of course, post-match, DiBiase ends up getting slopped again. Vince, ha, ha, ha.
Yes!
He loves that.
How relieved do you think DiBiase was that Sid finally got a win?
Think about how much it took. Like, there was like three spots here where DiBiase had to distract Godwin.
It's sad.
For
it's
Sid
sad.
To
I mean, just a terrible sign of where Sid's going. he needed DiBiase's help. I like JR noting early too that Sid's trying to change his luck on pay per view. Like, that was such a good dig too. Basically, his loser has lost like every pay per view match this year. So
he's trying
to change his luck. He's either lost or been left off. Everyone. So.
Wow.
Sid's chin locks were fucking lazy as hell, as always. But I did thought he showed some better killer instinct here and there. Like, it pops up at times, but the crowd just didn't care. Like, they were more checked out of this match than they were the opener. I did like the slop drop. DiBiase interferes. I thought it started soft. I thought the final minute was kind of fun. And Sid definitely needed that win, even though DiBiase helped him. And then, like you said, he gets slopped. Bigelow makes a save. Kama comes out. Like, all the chaos happens out of randomness. So it seemed like they had, you know, plans for maybe, like, you know, we saw, you know, Bigelow fought Godwin back in July as Henry was working for DiBiase before he turned face. So it looked like maybe they were trying to set up some kind of soft alliance with Bigelow and Godwin against the corporation, I guess. But whatever. I want a star in 3/4 on this.
Oh, my God. You went Iron Man. I want a star.
Okay.
Flat star. Meltzer, a half a star. When did Phineas come into the picture?
Like early 96.
Because I was thinking when Kama came out, I was like, oh, well, maybe this is an entrance for Phineas to come in.
No, I don't think he gets much of it. Well, I don't recall how he debuts or if he just shows up as a tag team or if he actually like comes out like makes a save like as an unknown guy. I don't remember. But they're in the tournament in 96. I think do they fight that? No, I don't know. He's around by early 96.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's not like around during the hog pen, so I know it was a little bit.
I want to say maybe January or February. Cause definitely, when they do the tournament leading up to 12, he's there. So.
Okay.
It's somewhere there. Yeah, I mean, I was probably a little high on this one, too, but I like some of the spots. And
yeah, you might as well just make a recording of you saying that throughout
Well, you know what?
Shit.
You know what? I've been mired in like 2 years worth of watching MSG fucking garbage from 1980s. So to me, like anything better than like a 1-star, you know, garbage Steve Lombardi match, like feels like it's an improvement. So when I go from watching that and talking about those to like this, I'm like, oh, okay. But in my mind, I'm like, oh, this wasn't bad. Star in 3/4. Like it's it's, you know, nothing. Like we're not even sniffing anything. Like pretty good. So the fact that we're arguing over, you know, 1-star matches shows you where we're at.
Where we're at. We go backstage again. Gorilla gives his ruling that either Yoko can go alone. For the main event, or he can find another partner that Gorilla will sanction. So there we go. He's made his ruling, and then we go right. I mean, this show does move quick. I'll give it.
That's what I like the most about the In Your Houses. They're 2 hours. They are five or six matches. The stories move quick. There's no fucking around, and we're in and out. Like, they are nice watches for sure.
I mean, because even like on this, like when they cut back to the ring from this backstage segment, like Bulldog is already halfway down the ramp.
Right.
So like, yeah, you don't even see him come through the curtain. And that leads us to our third match, which is the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith versus Bam Bam Bigelow. Bam Bam gets off to a hot start, doing his cartwheel, dancing around. I liked him showing off and dominating with his power moves. Smith slows it down, working on the legs, which I thought made sense given the kind of agility that Bigelow showed early on in the match. And then I thought Davey Boy was kind of gaining his bearings as a heel and how to control a match. Throughout this match, I thought he looked pretty good in his control segment on top and using various attacks on the leg. He does a half crab. He continually slams the leg into the mat. So I was really digging this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Then it takes a little bit of a turn. He kind of runs out of ideas and goes for a chin lock, which was a kind of a clear time killer and a way for right. Bigelow to start his comeback. Bam Bam starts making his comeback, and he immediately just kind of flies up to the top rope and goes for a moonsault, not selling his leg at all.
Yeah.
Which I thought was awful on his part. He misses the moonsault, and then I thought also the finish was kind of abrupt, where Davey Boy, I don't even know what that was off the top. Was that a forearm or a headbutt?
I think he was trying to forearm because Davey's standing, so I think he was just kind of diving into him.
The angle did not look good, where we basically just see Davey Boy's knees driving to the mat, and then he gets the power slam for the win. So I thought this was this is a perfectly acceptable match, kind of that baseline match. I went 2.5 on it. I thought there were some good ideas, some good execution, but also some missteps along the way. And like I said, probably halfway through, I was thinking this might be our first kind of hidden gem match. Like, I was really digging it, especially the leg work, and then kind of the back half slowed it up a little bit for me, but still pretty enjoyable.
Bulldog's, I mean, he's definitely been rejuvenated with the heel turn. Like, there's no doubt about it. And he's getting a big push. So Ross notes that he's fighting The Undertaker tomorrow night on Raw. So they're plugging, like, that big match on Raw.
Right, yeah.
Big main event. I did like Bigelow. Like you said, he started hot. we also cut to Cornette negotiating with Sid in a split screen.
Oh, so, yeah, that's right. That was cool.
He's trying to work on tag team partners. And he does this a few times. I guess we'll talk about it. But, like, why would these people say no? Like, what are they debating? Like, why wouldn't Sid want a shot at the world title? Like, that's all he's been thirsting after all year.
That's true.
Like, what's he debating about? Unless Cornette's turning him down. But look, they made it like Cornette was pleading with him. Like, why would Sid say no?
Yeah, well, it's dumb with Sid. And then the next person they do with Mabel, which I guess we can touch on now. I mean, that's even dumber.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Right.
Why
are they saying no?
And battled with this feud with Diesel and so gets stupid. Beat. Yeah, and now weird. He gets another kind of golden ticket chance.
Yeah, I mean, they should have positioned like Cornette wasn't impressed with their, like, that they were pitching themselves to Cornette, not that Cornette was, like, begging them.
Right, that's true.
To join.
Cornette kind of taking people into his office or whatever to hear their pitch and then deciding who to go with.
So Bulldog, Bigelow really showed off his power, I thought. Vince talks about Bulldog's motivation and says he's always overlooked for title shots. So I thought that was a key line from Vince, too. Setting up what's to come later, and then Bulldog's motivations too, like that he's always, and it actually makes sense because since he's returned in late 94, he's not really gotten much in the way of like title matches, and he was always kind of second fiddle and, you know, holding back. So I think they do a nice job explaining why he turned like he did and went with Cornette. Bigelow takes a nasty bump over the top. I thought that was pretty rough looking. And then it was awkward, and Bulldog rolled over, so he's arranged for Bigelow's headbutt off the top. I don't know if you caught that. Like, he rolls over to make him the distance work out.
Yeah.
Bulldog's always good for those kinds of things. Like, just clearly put himself in position for shit. I did like the leg work, too. I like the power spots at the end, even after the slowing down of the chin lock. Bigelow was awkward with his kickouts, too. Like, he was slow a couple times. Like, it looked like he looked out of it this whole night. And I think he's starting to mail it in. Like, we'll see it over the next couple months. Like, he clearly is realizing where his spot is and that he's no longer kind of, you know, 1A. The finish was good. The power slam was nice. And it was a good, you know, clean win for Bulldog, who's gaining the momentum. Bigelow's, again, just on fumes. I'm obviously a big Bigelow fan, and I've been disappointed with his face run in 95. Like, watching it for the written stuff and now here, they should have left him heel because he really doesn't accomplish much in the face role. Like, I don't think he has the look to be a top face guy, and his work has suffered in that role.
Well, he just, I guess, like, one thing I never, I mean, Bigelow, it's always tough because, like, yeah, it's impressive. It kind of goes back to, I don't know, I feel like an old crotchety wrestling veteran because while it is impressive he can do the moonsaults and the cartwheels and stuff like that, on one hand it is also like, I mean, this is a guy that has all these tattoos in his head, you know, so
right,
he really should be a badass.
Right.
Or
is he an acrobat or is he a, you know, biker? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
What is he?
Like, and I think shockingly, like, real late era WCW is probably the best he ever was at conveying that to
right.
a degree when he was doing the stuff with Goldberg. But yeah, I mean, like, right now, I think as a babyface, that could have worked, especially in 1995 as the kind of anti-babyface. You were starting to see that really creep in with the stuff at ECW and stuff like that. Obviously, it'll blow the door open about a year from now with Austin, but I think that could have worked much better than where he was. But, I mean, he'd had to been up performance-wise, too, and I do think definitely this performance on this match, like, this probably could have been a really good match
mm-hmm.
if he'd have wanted it to be.
Yeah,
and
he's clearly packing
it
in. I think, you know, the click broke him down. I think he realizes he's been pushed out. You know, Sean's clearly taken the number two face spot. Taker's obviously a top three face. You got Brett in the mix. So now he's probably looking at the landscape. Suddenly he was Diesel's partner. And now, you know, what's he doing? He's fighting Henry Godwin and mixed in with the corporation still. So I think he's clearly just packing. And that said, I like this a lot. I went four. No, like it. I went 2.5 as well. it was good. It was what you said. Perfectly acceptable. I thought Bulldog really kind of was the star of the match. Worked his ass off. And he's taking this push seriously. Like, he knows it's a big shot and he's trying hard. And they're giving him the shots at it.
Did we have anything that happened between then and our next match?
Well, Bob Backlund comes out.
Well, that kind of leads right in. So, yeah, so Backlund comes out.
Shit's all over the fans.
He basically is Douglas's manager for this match, right? I mean, is this a thing, or I did not remember this.
No, I mean, they haven't been together on Raw, and I don't think they were together, like, on the weekend. I think they just tie them together because of Backlund kind of being a smart guy and Douglas. But there's a lot of these little loose connections over the next year or so that they try and forge, like, out of nowhere. I don't think they do much together after this. I do like that he introduced Dean Douglas from the University of Knowledge, which made me
Backlund is a guilty pleasure for me, definitely, both in ring and in his wacky later years persona.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't like this pairing. I don't know what it was. I think that having somebody as eccentric as Backlund to be Douglas's manager mm-hmm. kind of played up the more goofier aspects of
right.
the Douglas gimmick that we talked about last time.
Yeah, I can see that.
A little bit too much. And, I mean, as we'll get to, he does introduce Douglas. His gear didn't do him any favors either. I mean, the singlet I have no problems with, but it had what? It was like an exclamation point on the back. It had all these weird, like, commas. It was just.
I mean,
odd.
They never said,
like,
he was an English teacher.
Yeah,
or,
it's like,
you know,
I mean,
so
is this the only thing he knows? He knows how to put a sentence together? So that was odd. I thought that kind of honestly hurt the match kind of before it began because it just looked a little bit goofy
mm-hmm.
aesthetically. For what has been a pretty heated feud.
Right.
Up
he
to
should
this
have wrestled
point.
In the freaking jeans and button down if he was going to be in these
yeah,
tights.
The IRS special.
Yeah.
Now, Razor was wearing his red tights here,
which I like.
Which
yeah.
I thought were very swank.
Yeah,
so
sharp.
He was looking good. And this is where Cornette is talking to Mabel. Him and Yoko were staring at each other, playing off their interactions on Raw. So that was pretty good. But, yeah, it did make sense. Mabel would want to be the partner.
Right.
I mean, come on. So this match, this is a strange match for me because, as we talked about, I've dug the feud going in.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it'd be more heated than it was, which I kind of understand if this is kind of the chapter one in a book. But I think, you know, by the end of this match, it's kind of clear to me to a degree that it's not necessarily chapter one in the feud for Razor versus Douglas as much as it is Razor versus Kid, like another advancement of them.
Yeah, Douglas is definitely being moved off.
Yeah, Douglas feels kind of ancillary by the end of this. So we get a lot of early arm work by Razor. I did think this match was worked a lot like Douglas's ECW stuff from this run.
Right.
Where the matches could feel a few minutes too long, almost universally. Like, it was just a couple minutes that felt like filler that could have been taken out.
This goes almost 15, yeah.
Right, yeah. Probably could have been like 11 or 12 and more heated. I don't know which match you want to add that time to. We'll get to that, but yeah.
Mercy and Savio, baby.
I don't know. But yeah. He sends Razor to the outside and takes over. We get some more back and shoulder work, so that was kind of a popular target for the heels on this night. I didn't think his control segment was awful, but not really exhilarating either. That's kind of been a theme between that and Sid. Both of them made sense psychologically, but yeah, they just didn't do a lot to keep me that entertained. We did get some good hope spots from Razor, I thought. Then the referee gets bumped, and I did like the finish as advancement for Kid versus Razor, where Razor hits to Razor's edge, but Backlund distracts the ref, which is Tim White, and 1-2-3 Kid runs into the ring, makes the pin. Razor had his back to Kid, so he thought it was a referee. He sees it was 1-2-3 Kid. They kind of start jawing back and forth, and then Razor essentially kind of like pie faces him out of the ring, like pretty dismissively, like kind of
throws
him
pretty
out
hard
of the ring. And then Dean gets one of the weakest roll-ups you'll ever see for the pinfall. That looked really bad. But I did like the finish with the back and forth between Razor and Kid. And that continues to be a really entertaining feud. And I think a pretty organic split where you can kind of see both sides there. I mean, it's a good little feud they got developing. But for the match, I really wanted this to be a good match. I liked the build going in. And I thought it kind of just failed to live up to those expectations for me. I did end up going 2 3/4 for this one.
Yeah, like you said, it's been a pretty well-built feud. I like the Razor being aggressive, cleaning house, you know, coming in hot. Douglas, by the way, he has like the quintessential 1995 haircut. And I mean, that is like the 95 style right there. The bowl with kind of the shaves like underneath. You know,
I'll give you that. That is very not 95. For two, but...
So nice bump, Razor hip tossing Dean over the top. I like that.
Yeah.
JR again digging guys on their pay-per-view said Dean wants to make a good impression here on his first pay-per-view. Backlund at ringside is random. It's like, why is he even there? They could have at least teased it somewhere. You're right. We talked about the exclamation point that making Dean look kind of stupid. Douglas focused on the lower back, which was actually a callback to SummerSlam. They've mentioned that a bunch for Razor on Raw. That he's nursing that back from the ladder match still. So I thought that was a nice callback. Good psychology there. I like the varied offense from both guys. It felt hard hitting. The crowd is so into Razor. They woke up for him, definitely. I like the finish in theory. I thought it was convoluted that Kid does the counting. Like, I wish they just had Kid come in and like kind of get in the way and Razor like throws him out of the ring so he doesn't get DQ'd. Like, him counting was stupid. You know, like, I don't know. Unless you're saying that Kid was trolling him, but they play it off like Kid was actually counting like to give Razor a win.
I mean, I thought Kid was just doing that kind of to troll him. Okay. But yeah, they did say that. But it's Vince on commentary,
right.
So you would hope he would convey what he means. And he was like, oh, he's come to help his friend. You know, it's like, well, why is he counting? Like, what's that going to
right.
do?
Right, it kind of makes it look stupid.
All that did was confuse Razor.
Right, it makes him look dumb, really.
Right. So. Which is a common theme.
For Kid, yeah, during this feud, so I guess maybe you could say, all right, he's an immature moron, like thinking he's helping, but he's not, you know.
Right.
So big win for Dean. I'm a little confusing. I like the match. I like the offense. I like the heat. I thought JR gets a real good line at the end where he says Dean has destroyed the friendship between Razor and Kid, which he has. Like, it's actually, you can say that it's been like a three-way feud, and Dean may be kind of getting pushed out of it, but he's kind of done his work, right? He's become this... you know, flying the ointment of the friendship of Razor and Kid. They were already starting to fracture a bit, and he just got right in between them and really fucked with both of them. and has caused a lot of issues. So I thought that was a good line by JR. I went 3 stars on this.
All right. Big Dave, you want to give a guess?
He's 1.25.
He did better than that. 2.25 okay. for this one. So there we go. We did have some filler in between that and the next match. So Doc shields the HBK hat and glasses combo, and you get a free video.
With the we'll talk about this too on the Raw because he's got it. But was this one of those a no label? Was he holding it up?
Yeah, no label. Yeah. Just holding up a generic VHS tape. They said
there's a chance, by the way, that there's a chance that it's Pro Football Cheerleaders because that's what my copy looked like.
I said it was like WWF Classics or something. Yeah. I can't.
I love it. No label.
Like a very generic.
Yeah, just nothing.
Yeah, just could have been whatever. Doc looks absolutely so lame.
He looks like a clown. I mean, just looks like a clown. I mean, he's peddling merch like a dork.
Then we get a quick.
Well, he talks to Michael. Yeah, he talks to Michaels and Diesel. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing of note again. Like, really, the build to this match is all the titles are on the line. Like that. Besides that, I don't think there's much intrigue.
No, they just talk a bit about the Owen fiasco, pretty much.
Right. And that leads us into the match that we touched on in the intro, and probably by far the match that's most remembered from this show, which is Bret Hart versus Jean-Pierre Lafitte. And, this I thought was a very, very good match. Mm-hmm. The opening tope by Bret is great. That's one that was kind of always put into his action reels and his highlight packages, and is deservedly so because he just goes flying pretty recklessly, kind of Undertaker at WrestleMania 25 style, through the ropes and almost overshoots Lafitte, but gets just enough of them that it looks reckless, but also awesome.
Right, and he has like a little roll at the end to kind of protect himself.
Right. And I thought this had a lot more hate in the opening than anything we've seen so far. So, you know, where
Razor... He wants that jacket back.
Right, Razor and Dean, I wanted a little more from that beginning, but I got it here. And then I love the transition to Lafitte going on top with the shoulder into the corner. Bret's always good at that, like really taking post shots, corner shots. We know on the Irish whips, he takes them head on. And he did that here where his shoulder looked like it really crushed into the ring post. Lafitte starts working that over. And this match just does a really good job, I thought, of making Lafitte look pretty threatening to Bret. And that's kind of commendable to both workers, but really mainly Bret. I thought this was a great Bret performance. Because, I mean, it's Jean-Pierre Lafitte. Obviously you wouldn't think he's going to be winning, especially because Bret has kind of dismantled now some of these kind of lower-level opponents throughout the months. Like, the deal with Hakushi is over. Isaac Yankel and DD.
Not yet. DDX. That's not over yet.
That's not over. But
we got more of that.
We did have a finish at SummerSlam, kind of. So they're still embroiled in a feud, huh? Great. we did get King on commentary, kind of. He essentially was sort of like the, I don't even know what you'd say, but he was sort of representing Jean-Pierre Lafitte to a degree.
I thought he was over the top in this one, actually. I thought it kind of took away from the match with his giddiness and how he was acting. Like, it kind of, like, the match was a real serious, like a real good match, and like, I don't know, a lot of stick. Just, it felt like kind of forced on this one to me.
Well, I think it just feels like that feud so now is just like, we're so beyond that. I mean, Bret Hart has literally by this point sticked his foot down Lawler's throat. Right. Like, what more do we have to prove here? Like,
he has to dispatch of his evil dentist.
Okay. It's awful. I did think they did a lot of teases for the Bret comeback, like in some nasty bumps throughout this match where the Lafitte goes for the cannonball attempts and misses those, and those look good every time he wiped out on that. One point Bret goes for kind of like a cross body and goes flying into the ropes. That looked really good. So a lot of teases. And then, I mean, the comeback in earnest never really comes. Like, this is not a kind of traditional Bret Hart, Five Moves of Doom, leading to the sharpshooter win, as he'd went for the sharpshooter a few times throughout the match, and then eventually they kind of both run into each other and on the ground, and then Bret's able to lock into the sharpshooter from the ground, and then turns over into it, and Lafitte submits. So the finish felt pretty abrupt, just because with Bret matches, I'm used to that certain formula.
Yeah,
I kind of appreciated it on one hand, but on the other hand, I couldn't felt, you know, I felt like, oh, that was kind of a little abrupt there, given Lafitte's performance. And I also, so I went 3 3/4 on this match. I thought it was very good.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I didn't go 4 was because of that finish, which is Tiki Tack, but also I really didn't think the crowd was that good for this match. I don't know if they just didn't take Lafitte as a threat.
Right.
But I didn't think the crowd was as into the match as the work kind of deserved.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. So those two things slightly, like, this was one where I was really wrestling kind of my nerdom back and forth on whether to go 4 stars or 3 3/4. And just at the end of the day, I kind of was like, I mean, it's like as close as you can get to me as being a great match, but yeah. I'm just going to put it at the very, very good level at 3 3/4.
Yeah, I went with the same grade. And yeah, I agree. I mean, I didn't mind the finish, but yeah, the crowd's definitely, all night the crowd has been kind of off. We've seen, Bret does get a pretty big pop when he comes out. I love the dive too. And there's a lot of hard corner bumps by Bret. That one shoulder bump to the post too is hard on the floor.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I like the comeback tease with Lafitte, backdrop over the top. He lands on his feet. Like, I thought that was kind of nice. And he sends Bret to the steps. I thought that was well done. And I thought Jean-Pierre was really on point in this one. Like, every big spot he hit was just, like, crisp and on point. Like, he knew this was a big spot, and he fucking delivered. Like, he hit everything dead on. I like the sharpshooter tease. You mentioned that earlier. I thought the crowd got fired up for that. And then, you know, Lafitte dodges it. And then Lafitte takes that nasty, sick, the flat back bump over the top to the floor, which is just gross.
Right.
God bless him. And then I like the other cutoff too, where Jean-Pierre survives and moves the Doom, and then takes back over with the stiff kind of plunge move. And then again, we get more hard corner bumps. And I thought the finish was fine. I thought it was hard fought. I like both guys going all out into the finish. And this is a real high quality. It's a match that really should have launched Lafitte as a player. I think. I think he got kind of hosed, not getting, you know, what he probably should have off of this. He looked great as a heel. Is this character a little goofy? Yes, but I think it toes the line enough where they can make him serious, even with the pirate thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it has to be goofy. And they're not playing him too goofy, but, you know, he's kind of on the line where he can go either way. And Bret, of course, gets his jacket back. But I really like this. I mean, Bret has been mired in this mid-card for all of 95 pretty much since, you know, the Rumble. And he's had some ups and downs, but his, you know, this is up there as probably his best match, or at least maybe tied with the Hakushi match or around there. As his best two, and luckily they'll fight again in a couple of weeks. We'll talk about it, just like he fought Hakushi on Raw again. So I think they at least value like the matches these guys have, that Bret has with these guys, to put them out there again. So we'll get a little bit more of this. We're not done, but that to me, like, do you feel like Lafitte should have kind of been a star after this match, or at least if not a star, but like in the mid card mix, like IC title?
Oh maybe? Yeah, I wonder if. Like, what happened there? If they heard the crowd and just went, or they just thought Lafitte was just kind of a filler? Because it is odd, and I am interested to see him from this point, because, yeah, I saw nothing in this match that should have jeopardized, like, his performance. I mean, we see that now with, like, Rusev, but, I mean, so this is a common thing. But, I mean, he certainly felt like he was delivering a great performance.
In his book, Dixon talks about it. I think he ran his mouth about, okay, like, being, like, it was something about, they were going to Canada, I think, and he was talking about how he should be fighting Diesel, and, like, the Clique got mad about it. It was something like that. The Clique ends up pretty much burying him.
Oh, too. My God. Yeah, here we
so,
go.
Is another one. So Douglas, Bigelow, him, like, they all end up eating the wrath of the Clique. And, like, I mean, this is just based on the book, but I think he's all the, you know, depth he went through to source it, I think is pretty accurate.
You can just see what's happening on screen. I mean, with those guys, like, you can kind of read the writing on the wall.
Yeah, so I think he, Yeah, so I think that's part of it. I think he was running his mouth. They were going. It was something along those lines. Like he felt he should have fought Diesel in Canada or something. And he was talking about how he was going to draw, and then they didn't give him the match, and he was bitching. It was something like that, and then they just de-pushed him as a result. But yeah, I mean, he's a guy they could have used for sure. Like they had a kind of a lack of talent at that level. So
yeah, I mean he, but you know, as we talked about, Sid's cooked. And we'll get to the people in the main event. I mean, you're raising Davey Boy, so there's that. But besides Davey Boy and... Mabel's sinking down. Yeah. Yoko.
Yeah, there was definitely a spot for him, especially at that IC level. You know, Sean's champ. You know, a couple match with Sean would have been pretty good. Obviously, you had a good match with Brett. Why not?
Oh, yeah. I think that would have been very good. So, yeah, it was kind of interesting. But, yeah, I mean, I think most people that watch this match and seen it before really enjoy it. I mean, it's certainly one for somebody like Brett's resume. Like, if you put Brett as your number one on the GWWFE, this is a good match to kind of point to as not an all-time classic, but something to pad the resume.
Right. Agreed. I think most of 95 was like that for him, so.
Yeah, really, I mean, if he'd had a good match with Backlund, which you know they're capable of, but if he'd had a good match with him and the, and I mean, the stuff with Lawler, I mean, he's kind of up and down, but yeah, I mean, you just think like he has two Diesel matches, the Hakushi match, this match, and the Davey Boy match. Mm-hmm. That's just his top pay-per-view output for 95. That's a really strong like six matches there.
Yeah, so I mean, if you take out the two Lawler matches and yank them, I mean, other than that, and Backlund, I mean, the Backlund's a real big disappointing one at Mania.
Backlund's rough to me. Yeah, I mean, the Lawler match, they had good matches before, but
and then he's got some of the TV stuff too. Like he's got the match with Owen on TV early in the year. Even the match with Jarrett isn't bad. And then the rematch with Hakushi, the rematch with Lafitte. So, you know, he's got some... No, I mean, it's a good year for him. It's a year he got de-pushed and overlooked, but it's a good year for him for sure. It's a resume padding year, like you said.
Right. So then what happened?
With Camp Cornette and Gorilla.
Oh, yeah,
and that's
what
they
right.
officially announced, that British Bulldog is stepping in for Owen for the main event. So he's going to be...
We hear that.
Yeah.
So Davey's in. And then we get Alondra Blaze showing off a completely hideous t-shirt, which I'm hoping you did not order.
No, I didn't. I wasn't really. I didn't have the money for merch in '95.
Oh, no merch.
I didn't have
to do much
stuff. No.
And then she also, if you ordered a t-shirt, you also got the generic videotape that she displayed here. So she throws that out. Oh, one thing I wanted to mention too early with Brett, when he came out, like he did the promo and then went straight through the door or curtain or whatever. I always loved that. They followed him right out. And Alondra Blaze, when she gets done with her throwing the t-shirt into the crowd, she goes through the door of the house right as Yoko's coming out. So, like, Yoko's music is going as Alondra disappears, yeah.
And so she's not champion here, right? Bertha Faye, I think, is champion. So
yeah.
Just trying to
give
her something to do.
No title belt. Yeah. Actually, like... Vince says, like, oh, Alondra coming in through the back door.
Yeah.
It was very obvious. Like, okay.
Going in Alondra's back door.
Oh, man. So that leads us right to our main event, which is the triple header, Yokozuna and British Bulldog versus Shawn Michaels and Diesel. Is this Yoko's last main event?
Oh, yeah.
I thought about that when I watched it, but I couldn't think of anything else. So, yeah, I think this is it.
Yeah, I don't think he made events. I mean, no pay-per-views. I think, you know, he gets a couple of big Raw matches.
So that pretty much ends his, I mean, I guess we can say probably 3-year run of being pretty much. I think this, I mean, you know, maybe a little bit of holdover afterwards, but.
Right.
This, to me, kind of feels like the end of the road of him as a top 3 or 4 heel.
Yeah,
the
no, I'd agree. I mean, he's a face by January, so, yeah. I mean, this is pretty much it. He's still kind of a big deal, like, Survivor Series, though.
Yeah, I was wondering that, and then also, like, when he becomes a face, like, where he's pegged with, like, versus Vader. I mean, he's pretty high up, but...
I don't think he really dips until like the summer of 96, honestly, as like a player. Like, they've always protected him. You know, even mid 94, after he lost the belt to Brett and he was kind of floundering a bit, like, they still kept him like in the tag title.
Oh,
picture,
yeah.
And then,
I thought in mid 94 he was good to go when I watched that stuff for the yearbook. Like, they kept him apart, too. And then even with the Undertaker stuff, that was kind of silly, but the promos for that, now that's a Fatu situation where the promos leading into the Survivor Series match I actually liked a lot better than you would think on the surface, where right. Cornette was playing it, oh, we nearly killed you in January, you know, like, it was kind of bringing an air to the whole proceedings. So this match, I didn't take a ton of notes on it. I thought it was a fun match. Mm-hmm. There was the beginning, as we talked about, was kind of some goofy shine, where he was kind of clowning around. He gets the best of both Bulldog and Yoko, and then yep. he does a spot where he mimics the sumo stylings of Yokozuna as they go after each other. Then we get some more back and forth. Diesel gets worked over a little bit by Bulldog, so they are really kind of building Bulldog up here. He looks like a threat to Diesel throughout this match. He does try to deliver a suplex to Diesel, which failed really miserably at one point through the match.
He fucks it up. But then he does hit a good one right after.
He does hit a good one, but at the beginning was kind of like, I thought Yoko hits a really good, takes a good bump off a back elbow.
Yeah.
And then ends up hitting one. And then we work more into the heat segment on Sean, which I thought was natural. Pretty good work again. Yoko does at one point go to the nerve hold, but it wasn't too long, so it didn't derail things too much. Hot tag to Diesel. He runs through. Pretty good stuff there. Some kind of contrived spots. There's that one spot in the corner where Yoko, like, falls on top of Davey Boy, which looked a little odd. But that leads us to the finish, where Cornette gets decked. Yoko actually hits a Samoan drop on Diesel, which I thought looked good. And then we have Owen Hart running out as Sean gives the sweet chin music to Yoko to send him out. We have Owen Hart running out. Diesel's able to kind of swat him away, hits the jackknife powerbomb, and it looks like we have new tag team champions with Diesel pinning Owen Hart, who wasn't in the match. So that's a little, I mean, obviously a cheap finish.
Right.
Which, even though I wasn't 100% sure because I'm hazy around this period, I figured would end up leading to the title belts, something, some shenanigans the next night. Mm-hmm. So kind of a cop-out finish when the build to the show promised they were not going to do such, like all titles were going to be on the line.
Right.
So that was a little disappointing. The match itself, fun main event. I mean, the heels win, which kind of like we talked about. I mean, the heels win, the faces win, which, as we talked about in War Games 95, I thought that was kind of inevitability.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think you thought Yoko, maybe Owen with the IC belt.
Well, maybe Bulldog, though. Once you get in the match, like, you could maybe sniff it. Like, all
Bulldog
right.
Bulldog with the IC belt. I could see that, but I still think.
Or
it
even
was,
the world. Like, Diesel, while dominant, like,
so.
He seemed a little bit right for the picking. And, like, if you look at it, you're like, all right, so why would they force Bulldog into this match? He's getting a big push. It's a way to protect Diesel, where if maybe Yoko drops the leg and Bulldog pins, like, it seemed like maybe a way to get the belt off Diesel with an easy cover, you know, if they wanted to. So they were pushing Bulldog pretty hard. Like, I don't think it's, like, impossible to think that they were, you know, that hinting at that. If it was Owen, I'd say no way. But Bulldog, the way they were pushing him, and, you know, it just turned. Like, it was possible. And they were already saying that Bulldog was going to fight the champion. I don't know if they said it here or the next time, but he was already lined up for the title match in Euros 4. So you could say, okay, well, maybe he defends the belt there. So, like, I don't think it was that out of the realm.
Okay. That seems like a stretch to me. Maybe. Like, put it at a 10% chance or something,
sure, but it's,
like that.
You know, better than the zero. Like, Owen's a zero.
I mean, I guess the War Games, they were probably 1% or 2%. Right. Only if the giant broke into the cage. But yeah, I ended up going 3 stars on this match. I thought it was a pretty good finish to the event. You know, nothing offensive, nothing great.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of sums up the card pretty much for me overall. Like, I didn't think anything was exceptional on this card, but Yeah, a couple of stinkers in the early going, but the final three matches, the matches with me somewhat delivered and were at worst decent. So pretty good end of the night, I guess.
Yeah, I thought Yoko still has a good presence, too. Like, he still feels like a big deal when he comes out here.
Yeah.
Sean, though, easily outpops Diesel. Like, Diesel gets a pretty good warm welcome, but Sean, like, I mean, it's, like, monstrous compared to him. And, yeah, like you mentioned, you get the usual Michaels hijinks. Yoko versus Diesel was kind of a cool battle and made me wish, like, they had fought at some point. Like, it could have been better than some of the stuff he was saddled with. You mentioned the fucked up suplex. JR points out that Sean and Diesel had never actually lost the tag titles. Remember, they forfeited them a year ago, so he brings that up. I like the final fun stretch where the everything breaks down and Owen shows up. Definitely some confusion. A fun match, you know, well executed, nothing too crazy by the book. It felt like a Saturday Night's Main Event kind of thing, right? Like you said,
yeah,
just
felt,
you know,
very Saturday's Night Main Event.
Very pain by numbers, 15 minutes, in and out, you hit all the big spots. A little bit of a threat, not a ton, like a Hogan Saturday Night's Main Event title match kind of thing, or a Clash of the Champions, you know, later years Clash of the Champions main event
right.
kind of match. I went 3.25 on this, so you know, right about the same neighborhood as you.
All right, cool. Meltzer went 3 stars here. He actually went 4 on Lafitte Brett, so he's even higher than we are.
Well,
so.
In the moment too, there's probably some shock to it. You know what I mean? Like
definitely. Yeah.
So
yeah.
He, you know, you may overrate a little bit in the moment. He's like, "Holy shit, that was all," especially compared to most of what they were churning out at that time. But you're right. I mean, I think the matches they stole the show on delivered. Right? Those were the top three: Razor, Douglas, Brett, Lafitte, and then the main. The other stuff was kind of just fodder that they had thrown together. So to me, the three matches stepped up and delivered on the night. 3 stars and above on all of them for me. And even, you know, Bulldog Bigelow was kind of the fulcrum of the show. So, yeah, no, I enjoyed it. It was, and again, you can't go wrong with those in your houses. A quick, you know, $1.40 or whatever it is, in and out. They move along. There's no downtime. There's no bullshit. The biggest bullshit we had was Backlund, and that was funny. So, it's, you know, it's not like there really was no time wasted in there. So, yeah, no, it was a good time. So, why don't we get to some awards? Probably pretty much on the same page, I think, for most of this. So, match of the night, I went, obviously, Hart and Lafitte.
Yep, that would be the winner there.
Segment of the night, which we've clarified now, is not a match. It's either, you know, an interview promo or like a moment in a match kind of thing. So moment of the night kind of thing. I went with Bob Backlund's promo. Cracked me up. I thought he was pretty funny, ripping on the fans, and the University of Knowledge made me laugh. So I went with that. That was my segment of the night.
What an easy mark you are. Yeah. I'm going to go with 1-2-3 Kid and Razor kind of at the end of their match. Mm. Sort of their jawing back and forth. I thought that helped develop their feud.
So that's definitely been your top feud, right, for WWF?
Yeah, I think it's pretty easily my favorite thing going on right now. And I'm interested to see when it'll stop being that. Like, I'm pretty iffy on the build to the Survivor Series main event. Like, I don't know that is really...
Razor Kid, I mean, you know, yeah, their feud goes till February. So, yeah, we'll see when it tapers for you.
Up to the crybaby, which I'm not crazy about. But I guess kind of... I mean, I guess you're just, like, sort of the immaturity of Kid. You're starting to see, like, I mean, he is being perceived as, like, a real immature, like, young idiot.
Right.
Throughout this feud. So I guess that kind of makes sense. But we'll see when I think that becomes like too far and it's like, okay, let's make this guy a threat. But right now I'm enjoying it.
I'm curious if it's when the heel, when he goes officially heel, might be
right. Yeah, like
for you.
Big time heel. Yeah.
All right, MVP, I was a little torn. I was leaning Bulldog at first because he has such a big night. Like I thought he carried the match at Bigelow. I thought he looked like he fit in the main event. But I ended up going Brett. He was so good in the Lafitte match. I'm not gonna say carried it because Lafitte worked his ass off, but he just felt like the real steady veteran, just leading him through the match of the night. And I thought he came out looking great. So him with Bulldog was a close second for me.
I go with Brett as well. Really enjoyed him. I think this is a great Brett performance.
I picked him in a couple commentary lines. One was the Sid, maybe Sid can change his luck on pay-per-view. That made me laugh. And then Ross saying I had a dictionary once, which made me laugh too for some reason. So those are my two.
Yeah, those
I picked
are
up.
Good. Okay. Yeah, I didn't have any huge ones besides the back door for a Alondra Blayze. So that was probably my highlight in saying that.
All right. Final. No debuts, no dropped angles that we saw.
And no mention of WCW whatsoever.
Correct, yeah, no shots fired at all. Very clean pay-per-view. I went 6.5 out of 10 on this. It's the highest grade we've had so far. I think it's the best thing we watched so far. I think it was a, well, all right, let me qualify. So it didn't have the matches that the top match, two matches that Fall Brawl had, but Fall Brawl had so much other shit dragging it down, whereas this is 2 hours in and out. So, and actually, I guess we had, yeah, so that was the highest grade I've given so far. You know, while I like parts of Fall Brawl, I thought this just moved a lot quicker, and the top three matches to me, 3 stars and above, and nothing really was bad or dragged. Like, Fall Brawl had that fucking tags out of match. The War Games was terrible. Like, there was just a lot of crap on Fall Brawl. So I thought this was a little tighter. If this was 3 hours, we're probably talking a different story. But for me, 6.5 out of 10.
I went with 5.5. Mm-hmm. I agree that probably the tag match and stuff like that is probably the worst of the two shows. But I do think the peaked higher on Fall Brawl with both Flair Arn, which is my favorite match of the month. And also, between Bad and Pillman.
But and, I think we rated them the same, right? We
had Lafitte and Hart. Those are pretty close. Like, I'd probably have Lafitte and Hart a little bit ahead. But those are pretty close. And I didn't think anything else sniffed, like, the second match of that.
Right.
So 5.5. I mean, you know, like I said, I thought it was enjoyable enough for 2 hours. But, yeah, I didn't think a lot was very consequential. And certainly the finish. To me, the finish of the main event here, if this was a more well-known show or even if this was WCW, I think that finish would get rode harder by critics than it got here. Just this kind of being a throwaway show, it's like, oh, well.
Right. It was only $15 anyway, so you got your money's worth alone on Brett and Lafitte, so whatever. All right, so... Yeah, so there you go. There's your awards and your grades. So anything stick out as a hidden gem for you? I don't think Brett Lafitte could be a hidden gem at this point, right?
No, yeah, I don't think that's a hidden gem. I don't think, even on the main event we ranked as 3 stars, which we said was like our threshold, I don't think I'd classify it as a hidden gem either.
Is 3 our threshold or 3.5?
I think we're going to have to go 3 or we're not going to have many hidden gems. All right,
3 is fair. Yeah, no, I would put this a little... Yeah, I wouldn't say this is a hidden gem. I mean, it was fun, but...
I mean, it was kind of... Shawn in 95 is... In the U.S. has got to be one of the top, probably, what, 3 or 4 workers in the U.S. at worst.
Just so happens we missed his best stuff with where we started. So.
Right. I mean, we're coming right off his classic run, but... I mean, he's still great, so.
All right, we got some feedback, so I guess we should mention we have a brand new Facebook page. Head over and like it. If you search Wrestling Warzone, it'll come up, but let me pull up the actual address here. It's facebook.com/PTBN Wrestling Warzone. We have all our updates there. It's actually been a pretty fun community so far. I've enjoyed it. We have some good debate going on. We have some good conversation. Every day we do a kind of a question or a poll of the day. And that is where you can share your feedback for us to read on air. And that's what we're going to do right now, Chad. So we got a bunch here. I'll start with our buddy Peter Winson. Greetings from Allentown. I'm curious to know your thoughts on the In Your House series as you perceived it at the time as a fan. Did it feel like a lesser pay-per-view? For me, yeah, it did. It was obviously cheaper. It was shorter. But they were putting some like pretty good-sized matches on it. So they still felt like must-gets for me. Like, as a die-hard fan, I was ordering all of these, or at least... you know, going over to Jim's house to watch it when I could. So, yeah, I mean, I was all in. I don't think it felt... Did it feel lesser than, like, a SummerSlam or WrestleMania? Yes, definitely. But I thought they at least were putting the effort in to put, like, big matches on these cards. Like, Diesel's defending the title on them all. The IC belt's on the line for most of them. The tag is on the line for some of them. So, you know, they're loading them up with some pretty big matches. So, I can't say they felt, like, too lesser, but they definitely felt a step behind the big ones.
Yeah, I mean, 95 is such a weird year of my fandom. I was 9 years old, so I don't remember really much of, like, what I was watching. Like, I know it wasn't laps, but I certainly wasn't locked in, I don't think, during that time. I mean, this was the Braves World Series year, right. So I know, like, around this time with baseball and baseball cards, I was huge into that. You know, like Chipper was a rookie, Maddox was rolling. So I do remember, like, around this time is when I was really, really into baseball. So I'm sure wrestling took a back seat just from the shoddy quality from both promotions. So, I mean, I wasn't getting any of these pay-per-views anyway, but it's like I wasn't getting SummerSlam either. Like, the only pay-per-views I remember that I got in 95, I don't think I got WrestleMania that year. The only one I really remember is Royal Rumble, because I was interested in the one-minute intervals. ADHD brain as a nine-year-old. I also remember, like, the Mania before the Royal Rumble, where Pettengill was kind of wandering around the arena. It was a cool aesthetic. I still remember, like, watching that Mania at my grandmother's house. So that's kind of like my watching the Royal replay on Thursday
right.
moment. And then Survivor Series. I did watch the Survivor Series because I had a pretty good suspicion at 9 years old that a title change was going to happen. And I was excited to see that. But those are the only two pay-per-views from both companies that I remember getting. So, I mean, whether I felt it was lesser or not, it really didn't matter because I wasn't exactly locked in either way.
Yeah, I mean, the only two I think I missed the whole year were In Your House 2 and 5. But I would have watched them, like, soon after.
Which is funny because those may have arguably the two best matches of the year. Yeah.
I know I went over Jim's, like, 2 days later and watched 2. Like, he taped it for me. I think I just had, like, a party or something that night. And then 5, I remember, was, like, a Christmas party we were at. And I think I debated getting the replay, and then I just waited for the tape. But 5 is interesting. We're going to see. They actually replay a bunch of those matches on Raw. And so I got to see Brett Bulldog, I think, for the first time actually on Raw. So, all right. So, yeah. All right. Good. Thanks, Peter. Brad asks, Brad Warren here, Brad Woodling, of course. He said, can Chad sing the In Your House theme song, please?
No.
And then Jennifer Smith said, can Chad sing all the songs?
Nope. Cannot do that either because I was not in New Orleans, which apparently was.
All right, Chris
Golo. Where are the camaraderie happened? Here?
Calm down, Chris Golo. You don't need a bitter co-host.
Very disgruntled here.
Brett Wolverton was in the crowd in Saginaw that night. Goldust had a dark match after the event went off the air. The crowd chanted Dustin Rhodes for most of the match. Ahmed Johnson had a dark match, too. Was called Ahmed Williams. Somewhere I saw the shirt that said, oh, he has it. 4 superstars, 3 championships, 2 teams, 1 match. So,
oh, my God.
Brett's got the shirt. He bought it. He must have saw a Lundra walking around in it and figured.
It may have been the one that caught it when a Lundra threw it into the crowd. Brett Wolverton, we should mention Judy Martin's buddy.
That's right. Yes.
That was nice. Sorry, Cauliflower Alley.
Jay Hinchy had never seen the show until last year, believe it or not. Yes, we didn't believe it. He liked the main event with Diesel and Shawn Michaels against Yoko and Bulldog. He was wondering why Owen no-showed until the finish. I guess
We didn't really touch on this. So, yeah. I mean, from what we can gather from the Observer and everything from that, it just looks like it was kind of a storyline
right.
that they integrated in to elevate Davey Boy.
And I think it was Davey Boy, and as we'll see next week, gives them the out.
Right.
You know, allows them to get the belts back off. So I think it was, pure storyline driven. Just, again, get Bulldog in the main and an easy out, switch the belts. He said, I don't recall if they did or not. I was amazed at how good Brett and Jean-Pierre was, and I also liked Razor versus Douglas. So thank you, Jay. Michael the Damos noticed a similarity with the show in Fall Brawl. Both had veteran performers given new gimmicks that got over. Well remembered, but were ultimately cut short due to injury. Could you compare and contrast Waylon Mercy and Paul Orndorff, if not for their injury, would they have made an impact in the war? I don't think Mercy would have, even without, because he just looked old anyway. Like, it's a good character. You almost wonder if he wasn't so big, could he have worked as like a manager in that role better than in ring?
Right. Yeah.
You know, and wonderful. I think his time was probably up too. I don't think he would have ever ascended maybe more than, like, TV champ at that point.
I mean, Mercy's kind of like the ground roots of a Bray Wyatt-type gimmick.
Right, yeah.
Which is kind of weird because, like, Jean-Pierre Lafitte, I actually thought when I was watching his match with Brett and he was in control, I was like, this is the best Bray Wyatt match I've ever seen. Like, the way he was controlling him, kind of, you know, this big, chunky guy.
Right.
With his power offense. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think Mercy would have made much of a difference from more of a bit player supporting cast. Orndorff is always kind of a weird person for me because, like, I always like Orndorff, but, I mean, I was born in 86, so obviously I wasn't around when he was lighting it up with Hogan And it just always seems weird to me that that's the feud that, like, really cultivated the business.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, of the Hogan feuds that I think of Savage, I think of Andre, I think of Piper. Mm-hmm. But there's something about that dynamic with Orndorff that really resonated for people at that time. But
I think it was the turn.
Really resonated for me. The turn helps.
Right.
But, I mean, I don't know if in 95 he would have.
No, I mean, he was done.
I think he was done, yeah.
I mean, he could have maybe, again, he might have hung around at that mid-card, upper mid-card level, put guys over, maybe grab another TV title run or something.
Yeah, I mean, possibly if when the NWO first formed, he could have been like, you know, the veteran person that right. wasn't going to take it lying down, like these punks disrespecting the business or whatever. But right.
Yeah, maybe he's with Flair and Piper or something.
You know, right, like, that's probably the best he could have hoped for.
All right, new PTB podcast correspondent Tim Slomka, that I heard him with me and Scott earlier this week, said, I remember at the time not being excited by In Your House. I was excited for SummerSlam, which shows what kind of a mark I was, but in those early In Your Houses seemed too short on the main matches. I remember thinking this is a one-match show with everything in the tag match. I'm not sure I've ever seen it either, as a video release on them were weird. I'll have to check it out. So there you go, Tim. And then finally, your boy, Andy LaBar. Didn't love this show, but it wasn't offensive. Don't know if I'm riding a PCO high in 2018 or the fact that he was wrestling my dude Brett, but that match was pretty rad. Tag team main event had great moments, but underdelivered as a whole. Not just you on Brett Lafitte, Andy. It's I think it's loved by most at this point.
Yeah, I think it's a universal pretty good match. I mean, we've been criticized. Oh, I have of being a Brett detractor from some of the fanboys in the chats, but. But, yeah, I mean, I think this is a great Brett performance, as we talked about, and really close to a great match. Like I said, I do the nerdy decimal points ratings for up to 10, mm-hmm. 1 through 0 through 10. And 4 stars on my rating start at 7.8 out of 10, and I did rank that match 7.7. So, okay. I mean, as close as you could get to 4 stars right. without being 4 stars.
And where did you have Bad and Pillman on there?
7.6.
Okay.
So,
gotcha. And you just broke everyone's brain. So, all right, there's the feedback. thank you for contributing that feedback, and please keep it coming every week. We'll put up a thread before the next show, which not sure when the next one will be. We'll record it at some point, and it will be the 925 Raw and Nitro. So, the night after this show for Raw, and then Nitro will pick back up. A lot of stuff going on with Arn and Flair still with Pillman. It's kind of the crux, and we'll see where Hogan's at, if he's still straight up, or if he's with Sting and Luger, where that's going, what's going on with the Stinky Giant. So we got a lot to look at on Nitro.
Guess we'll see if Sting's joined the Dungeon of Doom as a Savage prognificated.
Sting,
there.
Luger, and Jimmy Hart.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that at some point. be sure to check out all the other shows on all of our feeds. Like I mentioned, Scott, I had a new Place to Be podcast, looking at the February 88 MSG with Tim. I was on Talk and Pop last week, Chad, with Tim Capel, Jennifer Smith.
Yeah, you might as well be a co-host at this point.
Yeah, if they want me, I'm there. I don't get to talk that stuff, so it's fun, you know, talking Jersey Shore. And some
yeah, you become a, well, beyond that, I mean, reading comics, what the hell's going on over here?
I'm all over the place. Well-rounded, my friend. Renaissance yeah. man. Stand back. I got that. I think that's it for me. Anyway, you're not doing anything, right?
No, I'm strategically keeping a lower profile these days. This is all I got, baby. So In Your House 3.
Exclusive contract. So that's it. Check out all those shows. Marvel Age on Pop. Yes, you should check that too. It's got me into comics, so there you go. Anything else? Facebook.com/PlaceNation. Twitter, PlaceNumber2Nation, if you can bear it. Sorry. if you want to waddle into the mess that is Twitter. Muck of avarice. And then, yes, please like our Facebook page as well. We really want to get some good conversation going there. So, all right, anything else you want to add? You good?
I think we're good. We'll see you guys next time.
We'll see you when we're in your house tonight. In your house. Smell the napalm. Talk to you next time. That was kind of weird, but we're back in the club. Buying up the bar so the groupies show us love. Motherfucking Iceman, I'm the top gunner. Heater on blast, I'm the number one stunner. Watch it, girl, cause
cause I ain't your Mr. Nice Guy. More like the meet you, take you home and fuck you twice, guy. All dressed up with nowhere to run. I know I make you feel crazy.
Now I'm back to the good part.
Hey, he was born. He yearned for adventure. Yeah. Giving them what for. He's the pauper of the sun.